Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show. We're so happy you're here. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. My name is Michael Eric Owens, and I'm here with my co-host,
DT.
Man, I'm so happy to be back in the studio with you.
I am too, man. It feels good to be back in the studio again. Episode 10.
Man, episode 10.
And we're still getting it in.
Man, it's like we've been together a decade.
Man, I just revert back to the story, you know, how we met and how this has all transpired because of it, you know. And I really admire how building positive relationships can impact life.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's crazy, right? Because we never knew, you know, this was spawned out of, you know, just coming together and meeting, man, and just getting to know one another, and then knowing one another on a deeper level.
Man, I like you more now than I did before I met you.
That's cool, Richard. You heard that? He liked me more.
Yeah.
Usually it's the reverse, man. Like, this, what's up with this dude, you know? So, but man, likewise, much love. And again, shout out to our engineer, Richard. Blacken Studio, folks. Listen, you want to get your podcast going. You want a professional behind everything that you do, not only editing for you, but advising you every step of the way. Blacken Studios is who you want to reach out. Facebook, to hit you up. He will come back and respond to you and get you set up and get you moving forward. I hear all the time, Richard, they say, man, your show sounds so professional. You know, that's what we hear. And and that's the, you know, again, I mean, all D, me and DT,
all we got to do is show up and run our mouths for a little while. And walk away. Right?
Exactly. So, man, we just appreciate you and the great things that you're doing. And so today we want to talk about what does it mean to be an American. And in our opening, DT read First Amendment. Freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. And, you know, we live in a country where we talk about free speech and we talk about freedom of religion. But I would propose that this only applies to the privileged class. In other words, Christianity in our society is considered to be, you know, what this country was based upon.
The end all be all.
Exactly. And again, let me first say, because I know we have religious people that listen to this show. And I'm a man of faith. You're a man of faith. We're not here to denigrate Christianity, but we're here to talk critically about this idea of religious freedom and the lack thereof in our country. We live, again, we've said this, DT, we live in a democracy, not a theocracy, right?
Or a hypocrisy, right?
Oh wow, that's even better. Man,
we went to speak. We like to extend a thank you to Jim Smith, who allowed us to come and speak to a communications class there at Southern Nazarene University, and we spoke about this idea of having the freedom to believe what you want to believe, without the criticism of other people. And a lot of the students there too found it hard and difficult being from different places around the world. Even within the state of Oklahoma, having different religious views and still not feeling like it was 100% okay, you know, to always divulge what it is that you believe in because of, you know, what people stigmatize or place, you know, different stereotypes on these different religions. And so, yeah, man, it's definitely something that needs to be addressed. And how can we come to a common medium?
Well, and I echo, you know, Professor Smith in allowing for us to come to his classroom and share. You know, we want to do that as one mic, one voice. You know, it's not just about pushing the conversation, you know, through this medium. It's about pushing it at every opportunity that we can get. And, you know, anytime we can pour into the lives of young people, I think that's important to us. And we talked about, and again, this is so relevant, right? Because we've talked about that area of tension in mm-hmm. conversation, mm-hmm. and the students talked about, you know, wanting to be comfortable and wanting to feel safe. And when you start to have conversations like we're having right now about, do we have true freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, freedom of religion? Do we truly have that for all people? Okay, because usually it's cool if you believe in the cause. Okay, if you don't, then you know you don't want those people to assemble. We in our last show we talked about the gentleman out of Texas that you know just went off right about the Black Lives Matter movement, the Plant Panthers. This thing. Well, clearly he disagrees with that, so he said, "Get a slingshot, yeah, and go upside their head."
Slingshots,
you know, what I'm
go
saying?
Upside their head with them slingshots, and get all them knots on their head with them.
Oh, man. And then he's gonna say, "But listen," then he's gonna say, "Nobody goes to jail for using a slingshot." Well, what country is he in?
That is assault, my guy.
I'm like, man, you rewriting everything, right? So, you know, it's this area of tension. You know, let's talk for a minute just about this area. When people say, I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, and she was talking about, you know, being very honest about this Black Lives Matter movement. And she's from Milwaukee, being very honest about it. And, she was saying that, you know, it you know, because of the title, it just makes her, she gets it, she understands it, but because of the title, she just feels uncomfortable about it. And so we talked about, and that's what really she's kind of saying, what Dr. King said about mm-hmm. the Black Power movement. He said, you know, don't call it Black Power, you mm-hmm. see, because there is a stigma in our society when you say black, okay, it in the minds of I think the dominant culture, it becomes separatist, it becomes isolated, it becomes, and you are, we have done a disservice. You remember that phrase, it's a black thing you wouldn't understand it,
right
okay? So we have done ourselves a disservice in a lot of ways, but I understand that tension in that being uncomfortable. But how do we help people move out of that space?
From your conversation with her, just asking the question, did you feel like her uncomfortability came from having to acknowledge or kind of promote a black movement? Was that the, like, because, you know, like, if, you know, you and I as African-American men or black or whatever we're calling ourselves these days, if there was a friend of ours who, you know, was the president of the White Lives Matter movement, you know, how would that rub us in trying to be a true supporter of a movement like that, you know, given the title itself? I understand what your friend is saying, just by it being, you know, Black Lives Matter, it's really hard to wholeheartedly get behind it because you have to some way identify with the black experience to mm-hmm. really give it that.
You know what? You are right, man. I tell you what, man. We got the offering plate again. This brother is just like, man, my wallet just like, man, I'm looking at my wallet, bro. It's on the table now. You just preached. But you're right on, because what I said to her is you're not going to truly understand mm-hmm. what the movement is about. Mm-hmm. because you don't have the experience. You can sympathize, you can empathize. And I use the analogy that a parent loses a child. Okay. You can hurt for that parent, you can sympathize, you can empathize, but you have no truly idea the deep pain that that causes. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's the same thing. If you're not black, you haven't lived in this skin, you cannot fully understand. And it takes a unique and special individual to, I guess I would say, defer, you see, and to say, you know what, I could never understand this, but I'm going to defer to you. I'm going to allow for you to talk about these issues, to educate me, to enlighten me as best as I can ever be, because I'm not black. I will never know what it feels like to live up grow up in a privilege.
Right.
So, you know, I don't, you know, I can't, I see it, I from a distance, and I respect it. I don't look down on people that have more, that's kind of a crazy statement to say you look down on people who have more, but some people who have more are the most shallow people on the planet.
And a lot of people who have more, let me go back, a lot of people who have less, and like you're saying, will look down on people who have more because, you know, one, they do not understand what it's like to be privileged or enjoy those type of luxuries or whatever. But it's almost also a justification of, you know, where we stand in our own lives and whatever insecurity is about where we are, that we're able to look down upon other people just given their birthright.
And you know, this, you know, our listening audience, it might appear that we're deviating. We're not really deviating, because this is all about freedom of, to assemble peacefully, freedom of expression and speech. And we're going to get to the religious thing. But that conversation, preparing a person to enter that conversation, you have to do some work on yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all been uncomfortable in situations, but truth, the recognition of truth, the embracing of truth is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, truth is oftentimes difficult to handle, to digest
outwardly and inwardly.
I mean, you to living a lie is much easier. Sticking your head in the sand is much easier. You know, just ignoring the problem is much easier. But when you have to face it and deal with it, that's where the difficulty comes into play. And so what I will say is that to our brothers and sisters that are outside of this experience, you got to do some work on yourself. I mean, the problem was not created by minority people. Hmm. You know, nobody raised a hand on the continent and said, you know, come get me and take me and enslave me. Hmm. You know, no, nobody did that. Nobody said, I want to, you know, stay on the plantation and be in bondage and have you, you know, take my wife and my kids and sell them. You know, nobody said that. I mean, this problem was created by America. No black man or woman wrote in the Constitution that they were 3/5 of a person. Nobody did. Nobody said put up a sign that prevents me from coming in and using that bathroom. Or put up a sign that says I need to go around to the back to get the same food that my white brothers and sisters easily sit down in the front and eat. Mm. Nobody got on the bus and said, you know what, I want to sit in the back because I'm less, I'm inferior. Mm. This is not a problem that was created by minority people. It's a problem that was created by American society. And so guess what? We all have to do work in order to come to the point where that tension in that conversation is there, But we work so closely together, DT. We, you know, it's like, man, like we grinding together.
Exactly.
And we're going to come out in the end with an understanding of who we are and what we are. You know what I'm saying.
Now.
On the strength.
Now my wallet is on the table.
And I'm reaching in it, bro, because I, you know, I got to make my car payment, man. You know what I'm saying?
You but, know? Yeah, man, you just spoke of many, many key points. But, you know, back to our religious conversation and people not really having a space to voice their opinions about how they feel about, you know, religion and, you know, beliefs and things like that. And religion is a really sticky conversation. When you get to talking about that with anybody, your friendship may be on the line. And we talked about that to the students in the classroom who also had friendships or relationships that, you know, ended when they had to talk about what they believed in. And I know that's that's a sticky subject for a lot of people. And it's really hard to really, like I said before, give details about what it is you do believe, because you know that that may be stomping ground for some negativity.
They say religion and politics, right?
Mm-hmm. Just people just stay away from that.
Don't talk about it. Don't ask me.
Man,
I see some of these things on Facebook, man. And don't get me wrong. I saw a post that said, I don't want some of y'all praying for me because the lifestyle y'all living and this, that, and the other. So don't pray for me. And I just thought, why would you even say that? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, I just, getting back to identity and what we think, you know, who we think we are, what we are. Richard over here taking a picture of our, we got some cups with the One Mic, One Voice on. They're pretty smooth now.
Pretty nice.
And so we're bringing in One Mic, One Voice. It's a pretty smooth looking cup.
Like,
too.
Give my cup back. We're not gonna give that one away, man. We got some other ones.
There you go. Some he's little ones.
He's getting all protective about that.
A little espresso cup we're giving away. But you know, I just think, you know, how religion is just used in such a divisive way. When you contextualize religion, I mean, it's about love. It's about community. It's about uplifting, you know, the lowest among you. It's about grafting into the vine those who need nourishment. Mm. I mean, religion in its purest form, and not the way it's exercised now. The spewing out of religion. This young man, right? Ahmed Mohammed made this clock and he brought it to school. Wanted to impress his teacher. And they got so alarmed, you know, they called the police and the boy got arrested. And the news comes out that he's going to be going to a new school. But Why did they get alarmed, DT? Why?
Because his only crime was being a Muslim.
Mm. Wow. You mean I can get arrested simply because of the way I look, or the way my name is pronounced, the skin I'm in, yeah. the neighborhood I live in. Let's talk about the connections that were made there that caused the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You've already talked about it because he was a Muslim, right? And so what associations do we make with that?
Terrorism is one of the main ones, I think.
Because only Muslims do terrorist acts.
And you know,
right?
Man, it's funny because as we delve deeper into this conversation, even the likes of Muslims and Christians, at the end of the day, they only end up, you know, pointing the finger at each other. You know, you need to watch out for those Muslims. No, I mean, you need to watch out for those Christians.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's been wrongdoing on each side. But as individuals, we have to identify with our own action. And so to be able to say I'm a Muslim, you mean, yeah, that's saying something to my religious orientation. But it has, you know, I don't want to say not a lot to do, but there are more parts to me than identify me as Muslim and then subjecting me to terrorism.
And so the association from Muslim to terrorist to maybe suicide bomber to anti-American to you don't belong in this mm-hmm. country and to that your religion is not the true religion because Christianity mm-hmm. is. So all of this rolled up in one says we need to get you out of here. We need to deal with you. When all the boy did was make a clock because he wanted to impress his teacher. You see how something so pure can be turned so grotesque because of the societal, for the constructed now identity that society labels or I can say places upon a kid that is simply what? Born into a family that happened to be Muslims.
And isn't just think about how that might have striped his creativity or given him some indication that, you know, there's no reason for him to be smart or think outside the box. Or,
no, he going to blow us up.
I mean, there are lots of things.
No, he going to blow us up. That what is this? He got a clock? Oh, no.
It's only a matter of time.
911, is it ticking? I mean, you know, it's crazy, man. It's like so insane. Over the top, man. I mean, it's.
But I, like you're saying, man, it's just it's the extreme of, you know, this being something, the extreme of this being something magnificently creative and innovative. And, you know, this kid just giving himself an opportunity to showcase some extra talent that he has. And the other extreme of it being, you know, a bomb or, you know, some type of alarm clock that goes kaboom at 12, you know.
And, you know, maybe this is kind of a news flash to our audience, and I hope not. But not every Muslim is an extremist mm. that wants to not only blow you up but kill themselves, mm. okay? News flash. Dylann Roof, was he a Muslim?
No.
Okay. Jim Jones, was he a Muslim?
No. did
Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Charles Manson, was he a Muslim? Okay. Ted Bundy. We could keep going. The Son of Sam. Timothy McVeigh. Mm-hmm. We could go on. Were they Muslims? Or was those acts of terrorism? What about the KKK and all the havoc that they've wreaked on black people? Okay, are they Muslim? No, they actually call themselves Christians.
They also call themselves Americans.
Oh, now we come full circle. What does it mean to be an American? Wow. So, you know, it's interesting because this young man took on the persona of the entire Muslim culture. Okay? Right? Now, did Dylann Roof take on the entire persona of white American culture?
No.
Oh, okay. Did Timothy McVeigh take on the entire persona of white American culture?
I did not.
Oh, okay. So what's the difference? What is the difference?
It's an easier target, I believe, to be able to say, because you're Muslim, this is who you are. But if you're an American, you can be lots of things.
If you are a white American, you can be an individual, DT. Mm-hmm. It goes back to what we talked about, man. This has been so eye-opening to me, this thing, individual identity versus group identity as it relates to white culture, as it relates to minority culture. If you are a minority, you are seen as a group, not an individual. And with that, all the stigmatization comes whenever you try to do something. But the white person, that's just Dylann Roof.
You know? Old Dylann.
He just crazy. Man, I tell you, something wrong with Dylann. He crazy.
Hey,
no,
they actually had a few of his friends who spoke out. I mean, just...
man,
kind of talking to his character, you know, as a young man or whatever, it was like, man, yeah, like Dylan, he just used to say all type of crazy stuff, man. We never used to take him seriously.
Man, I mean, this is so.
But our level of concern, I think, has dropped tremendously. Even going into our future topic here after the break, man, our sensitivity to trauma, to things that are really grotesque and ridiculous that are happening around the world, we're just numb to it. And like you're saying, if there's a person who is, you know, committing heinous crimes or, you know, doing things that are unjustifiable, it's like, what do we do with that, yeah, man? Do we all rally up the troops and ride down, or, you know, do we sit back and wait for the rest of the details to unfold? You know, I don't know.
You know, we, as you say, you know, we just become,
we like in a limbo. We don't, yeah, yeah, don't know which way to go.
No, because there is, I just think,
like this kid I met who, you know, created this clock, you know, there's been some damage done to him, you know, whether people want to look at it that way or not. But is inviting him to the White House going to take away the experience he had of being arrested and being sent to jail? You know, these things that we try to put a Band-Aid on the issues,
yeah,
don't necessarily solve the problem. They're just a part-time fix.
Yeah.
But this kid is going to live the rest of his life and have to remember a time when he was labeled,
yeah,
and he was subjected to terrorism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, how do you live through, you know, those moments and put them behind you? I mean, he was even offered, I think, a couple of scholarships or something like that too. I think MIT or something might have. Well, I tell you what, I definitely go to the White House though.
Yeah, I would.
You know what I'm saying? I want to meet Michelle. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, the president, he cool. I mean, we'll do the dap thing and everything, and, you know, but I want to meet Michelle, man, because I think Michelle is one of the most intelligent first ladies we've ever had, and just really pick her brain about her experience being the first black first lady. You know, I think that would be Michelle, if you're listening, we want you on the One Mic One Voice. Even, like anytime,
if somebody even just mentioned,
just call for office. 5 minutes. You know, we can send us an email. You know, anything you want to do, we just, you know, if you're listening,
call into our live show next week, September 10th.
Yeah, yeah, Michelle Obama calling to the live show from the White House. Yeah, and while you mentioned that, man, live show next week.
Next week.
The phone number. Yeah, we're going to get it right this time.
405-300-8344.
There you go. There you go. See?
And we actually have a button now on our Facebook page. So once we go live, we'll send out a message. You know, just call now. You can click that button. It'll direct you right to our line. We're looking forward to hearing from everybody.
Hey, shout out too, man, to our listeners on the continent, Africa. South Africa, Zimbabwe, Ghana, Kenya, Nigeria. Shout out to all of them on the continent that's black and white that's listening to the show. Shout out to Greece that's listening to us. You know, shout out to the Czech Republic. Shout out to South America that's listening to us in the Bahamas. And of course, always to our folks in our own country that are listening to us, just about in every state. Man. It's, you know, it's humbling to know that people are tuning in and providing feedback to us about the topics that. I mean, I think we've hit a note. I think this harmony that we have resonates with people because mm-hmm. we're talking about things that matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, again. We could talk about anything. We could make jokes and laugh all day, but, you know, One Mic, One Voice is talking about things that matter. And as we go to break, I want to mention, I don't know, you know, after the debates, Donald Trump had a first, I guess, town hall or whatever you want to call it. And the first question he got was, what are we going to do about all these Muslims in this country?
And also making reference to our own president not being an American.
Come on. I'm just.
But oh my God. Man, my brain hurts from thinking about the ignorance and. Oh man.
It's like, but this guy's, he stood up and he's like, you know, what are we going to do about the Muslims? You know, President Obama's not American. and these are the people that follow a mind like Donald Trump's. And that troubles me because, I mean, you think that it's just him, and it's not. There are other people who also share his ideologies, and those people too are, and it's not everybody. It's not everybody. But no. For the most part, they're also imbeciles, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, the attack upon a group of people is something we need to stop in this country. No one should be no one should have hung around their necks and placed on their shoulders the acts, the horrific acts of people simply because you look like them or your name is happens to be similar to them. There's individual accountability in our country, and it's a shame that is only for a certain class of people. We need to have this conversation. We need to break that apart, because all of us have the right to be judged individually and not as a group.
And what's funny to me is that, you know, even after this guy stood up and made the comment, Donald Trump was, I don't know if he was just so excited he got a question or just, you know, didn't have time to really listen to what the guy was saying, but he did not address anything that the guy said. He was like, oh yeah, we're going to be talking about that and a lot of other stuff too. I was like, oh, okay.
And you know, Senator McCain shut when that lady, when he was running, brought up the fact that the president was a Muslim, wasn't born here. He shut her down. He said, no, that's not true. He said he's a good man. He's a family man. However, I disagree with him when it comes to a lot of his policies and this, any other thing, which I thought was just he shows such dignity.
And it's just like you said about, you know, identification with any causes going on. You know, I don't understand it completely. I don't identify with it completely, but this is the way I feel. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the stance that this person is taking.
Yeah, yeah.
Saying, you know, this guy's a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, don't attack his character. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do disagree with some of the ways that he's, you know, handled policy.
And it was great because what Senator McCain did was the president was identified as a group. And then he redefined him as an individual, mm-hmm. and said, no, he's a good man. Okay. No, he didn't say he was a good Christian or he was a good, he individualized him. Matter of fact, I would say he made him human. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That's another.
Okay. He made him human. And people can identify with that. Okay. Well, okay. He's a good man, but I disagree with him. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that was class, that was statesmanship, and that was the truth. And I've always liked John McCain. I'm going to be honest with you, man. I've always, you know, he was against Martin Luther King Day, but he came around. He showed me he's a man of evolution. He can, with the right information, he can change. I've always liked him and appreciated him. And so, listen, folks, we're going to take a break. Can we take a break, DT?
Be right back. Be sure to like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, @1Mic_1Voice. And be sure to visit our website to get all of our content at onemiconevoice.com. Reach out to us on the email, bt@onemiconevoice.com or Michael Eric Owens @onemiconevoice.com.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. I hope you enjoyed the first half of the show. We're talking about what does it mean to be an American? And, of course, citizenship. But this value-added, I think, rights of free exercise of speech and of the press, and to peacefully assemble and to petition the government for grievances, for redress of grievances. Therefore, do all of us have those rights? And I think we have clearly stated that why it is on the books. Okay.
What you said in that definition of being an American is that, if I'm hearing right, do we have some sort of due process?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a due process, but I can tell you, I've been pulled over a couple of times, and it didn't seem like that 14th Amendment was helping me out at all, or should I say at all. And brother got a little French up in him, and you know what I'm saying. Yeah. But I mean, does this obligation, and so we move from this idea of being an American to this obligation beyond our borders. I mean, when we think about the refugees that are traveling, trying to get away from the violence that is in Serbia, and how they're trying to get into these different areas.
Hungary?
Yes. There we go. See, that's what I'm saying. This brother know his geography. and how Hungary completely shut down their borders. Matter of fact, some of the refugees are even under attack. And they're fleeing, lost their lives on the way. And Germany has, of course, when if they're successful enough to get through Hungary, they can go to Slovakia and the Czech Republic and to Germany, because Germany said they would take a certain number, which was a pretty large number, and they could even get into Austria and get to Switzerland, but we have this massive exodus of people. Are we responsible for the suffering of others beyond the American shores?
I think as individuals, as we become to understand what is happening not only within our own neighborhoods, communities, states, but around the world, it kind of heightens your consciousness, and also kind of gives you a sense of moral responsibility to at least be able to do something. You see all of the campaigns on TV, fundraisers for third world countries, and they need food, they need shelter, they need appropriate resources for medication and different clinical needs. And I do believe that we all have some sort of obligation if we understand, or if when we come to understand what is really happening around the world.
But I'm an American, man. I'm American.
And that's something else, because we don't do the best job of taking care of each other here. And it's the saying that says, sweep around your own back door before you try to sweep around mine. That was a song, wasn't it?
Man, you went back, man. That's one of them tavern songs. Right. Dusty. Yeah, with a banjo or something.
And so, like, people who live here in American society cannot really see outside of this place. And so the issues and the concerns and things like that are going on around the world are not as prominent or is not as a priority because, really haven't dealt with the things that we have going on here.
Well, you know what, man? I totally agree with you. We're not taking care of business at home. But there's an article that we've been tossing around. Why don't you introduce that article to our listening audience?
This article is by Peter Singer. It's called Famine, Affluence, and Morality. This article was written back in 1971. And there was a similar situation going on in East Bangladesh, where up to 9 million refugees were fleeing the country trying to find resources have pretty much become what the article reads as just downtrodden. They lacked, you know, basic needs, food, shelter, water, those things. But he also said that, you know, even amongst these things that were going on, that there should have been some type of cohesiveness that allowed people from the outside to provide resources for these people who are suffering.
Yeah, he creates this this ethical dilemma that says kind of you in the developing country, you in the countries that are doing well off,
do something.
You have an obligation.
Do something.
That the borders don't matter. That American, you know, being, you know, from, you know, being from England, being from Germany, you know, being from the Czech Republic, that means nothing. Mm-hmm. That's what Singer's arguing, is that we have an obligation to help simply because we are human. Simply, and let's talk for a minute about these boundaries, these, you know, these continental boundaries, this identity of belonging to a country. You know, you hear so much rhetoric now. We hear it now so much on the Republican side of the House, but we're going to hear it on the Democratic side of the House. This idea of America being the greatest country, America leading the country, leading the world. America needs to get back in there, her place of leadership. You know, America. I mean, we hear all this nationalistic talk. But isn't every, now correct me, DT, isn't every country comprised of people?
Yes.
I mean, the last time I, and don't they all come from the same place?
Yeah.
Okay, from a woman. Mm-hmm. No matter, so if I'm born in Israel, or if I'm born here in America, I still come out of a woman, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I have no choice or decision on who that woman is, and where she decides, or
where she comes from,
mm-hmm. and in the place that I'm gonna be born into. So how, just to help me understand, how can one country be better than another country when simply they are both comprised of people?
You know, I often think about these psychological tricks that we've played on each other from history beginning that undermine and that in a lot of ways make us feel less than who we are. I mean, there was verbiage in our constitution that labeled blacks as three-fifths of a person.
Three-fifths.
And so this idea of, you know, levels and
3-5
status, you know, this has been the common language that we've spoke to kind of equate our differences or whatever. But like you're saying, man, there is no reason, if there is a need for people wherever they are, that other people should not be trying to do something about it.
And why is one country better than the other? So what would be some markers of that? So if I said America is better, you know, would I be saying, well, America has more wealth? Okay. America has more opportunity.
That word right there within itself kind of encompasses every reason why Americans feel the way they feel and why outside countries feel the way they feel about America, because there is a sense of opportunity here.
So there's more opportunity.
Good or bad.
Okay, good or bad. You probably can come here and be a pretty lucrative criminal if you wanted to be. But I would argue that our definition of better is a problem.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Because,
I mean, because what is it based on?
The idea that you are better because you are born in a place that has opportunity, I think, is twisted. We are fortunate to be born in a place where we have opportunity. Does it make us better? Okay.
I will say that, you know, of course, the people even that we consider better by whatever standard of impact they made on our lives, on our societies, on the world, we gauge that and kind of measure that way. So as, you know, somebody who, you know, invents something or comes up with an idea that has altruism that is going to be beneficial to other people, has a lot more value, carries a lot more weight than somebody handing, you know, you two double cheeseburgers through the drive-thru window, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The, it doesn't make them better, but, you know, at the same time, there is a necessary value that you have to be creating as well.
Well, let me say this to you. What do we need to survive? We need food. We need water.
Water.
Some would say shelter. Some sort of shelter from harsh conditions. Some clothing. Although there's those nudist camps where people live. You know, they don't have.
Bucket.
I've never been to one. Yeah, I think Richard.
Richard. He spent his time in a lot of crazy places, man. You got to watch him.
No, man, keep it on, bro. We cool, man.
Yeah,
we cool.
Sure.
We, you know, but basically, all of these things that, you know, eating at the 5-star restaurant and, you know, wearing a, you know, a $5,000 suit and living in a, you know, a, you know, 10,000 square foot home. Serves the same purpose of, you know, going to a regular restaurant or cooking a meal at home and living in a 1,000 square foot hut. And having it serves the same purpose. Mm-hmm. So again, I get back to this thing: is why is it better? This is vanity. Mm-hmm. That's my point. We say America is better because of vanity, because we're walking around here with our chests stuck out, talking condescendingly to people simply because they were born in a different location. Mm-hmm. That's really what it boils down to. And the location that they live in doesn't have as much opportunity as we have. A better way of looking at that is to simply to say, you know what, man, we are so fortunate to be in this situation.
Man,
how can we improve the lives of others? Not make them better. Not we gonna bring them up to our level of greatness. No, they're already on the same level with us because they're human.
Man, it's just like when I was in Belize just a couple months ago. You know, that place has a lot of poverty, a lot of low to no income situations, and you know, you look at the people and they're happy. And some would argue, you know, that because you come from, you know, places where there's extreme poverty and you don't have the opportunity to have, you know, the nicer things or these better things that we're talking about, you don't have a choice but to accept it and to just, you know, deal with what you have. But there is also some real truth to what the people there when I was there said. You know, they say, you know, it's not because we have no money. You know, we have the beaches and we have these beautiful sites and a rich history and these things that make us feel good about who we are. Not necessarily, you know, having 10,000 square foot homes and, you know, these other things that Americans identify with as a high standard of living. But man, I don't know. It's got to be something that allows even people who are poverty stricken to still find joy in their life and not have to live up to a standard of fakeness.
Yeah, I mean, you said a mouthful. We are all human beings, deserving of respect and dignity, regardless of our color, our geographical location. we have to put away this nationalistic identity of looking at who we are. Plus, just piggybacking on what you talked about earlier, we're not even taking care of the folks here. And you're looking down on people that were born in this country, that are labeled Americans. I mean, how many times have I heard, go back to Africa? You know, go back to Africa, man. I ain't from Africa. You know, I love the continent, been on the continent, okay? But I happen to be born here in America. Born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Mount Sinai Hospital. Okay, I think it was like 7:30 in the morning, April 27th. Okay? Richard over here, he's trying to calculate things. He gonna figure it out. But I'm from here. And so change the way you think about this thing and realize, I know we're in the political, cycle of craziness on both sides, where rhetoric and the American flag. I was in the Navy for 13 years. So the critics out there that saying that, well, he don't love his country, this, I gave 13 years of my life to this country. What have you given? So before you criticize me and tell me I don't love this country, I gave 13 years of my life to this country. So go ahead, check yourself, look in the mirror and ask yourself, what have you done? Okay. I think if anyone can criticize this country, it's those that have served and sacrificed for this country. And guess what, DT? I remember when I was in the service, they didn't call us heroes. Okay, they didn't roll out the red carpet for us. That's a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I served this country when many Americans had disdain for the military. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to talk about that. So if you're a critic out there and you want to look and say, well, he don't love his country, I gave 13 years of my life to this country. What have you given? Pause. Wow. Okay.
Wow, Mike, that was real serious for you right there.
Man, the meter. You remember the meter we talked about?
It got we got green. That means everything's good. Everything's a go. Right. We got yellow. That means it's kind of getting a little bit exciting, but I ain't about to go there with you right now. Now we got orange. That means, hey, one more comment, the wrong response, it may trigger the red. So we in the red, I mean, there's no turning back. It's severe. where were you right there?
Man, I was green, on yellow, severe.
Orange. Oh, severe.
I was on severe. Severe. You know what? I want somebody to call in next week and challenge me on my love for my country. Call in. I'll tell you some stories, okay?
Yeah.
Didn't hesitate to leave my family and go out,
man, that's on the water. A great sacrifice you make to do something like that.
You know, so 13 years, brother. See, he trying to add it up. Richard trying to figure out my age, so he calculate the but so what I'm saying is we had to get away from this nationalistic talk and realize, number one, that we're fortunate to be in a country where we have these rights and these privileges, although we can argue that some have it better than others. We're no better than anyone. We're no better than the refugees that are trying to make it across Hungary at this point. We're no better than our Islamic brothers that in Kuwait and other places. We're no better. We're not better. Okay. We have an obligation because we have been given much. What does it say? Much given, much required.
Much is given, much is required.
Okay. We have an obligation to reach out and to help. It's called being a citizen of the world.
And man, people make these very ignorant comments about, you know, other people who are around the world struggling and wanting to come over here and provide an opportunity for themselves. That word opportunity we go back to. But I remember hearing about a recent politician, I won't say his name, but he made a comment saying that people want to come here because we have cable TV.
Because we have cable.
Not because, you know, it's in any way that life is not sustainable where they come from. Not because of, you know, the terrorists who are constantly bringing pain and suffering to these people's lives. Not because of any of that they want to get away. It's because we have cable and they cannot stand the fact that we get to watch the Thunder play basketball 52 nights. I mean, man, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
And it just goes back to what I said about us not taking, you know, each other's lives into a real consideration, you know, where we feel because it's coming from somebody else that it's not genuine.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. You know, that being an American standard against other people who come from outside and try to make their lives better in this country.
Yeah, I mean, that's just we on iTunes now, right? So we can't we got to clean. We can't say nothing like because you got to beep it out. That's more editing for you. So let me. I'm not gonna say what I was gonna say. That's just oh, not hold on, right. Wait,
before you say anything else, Mike, I got my meter here.
Got your meter,
and I'm still in the red. Is it coming down?
Yeah, yeah. I'm in yeah. Green now.
Green, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm okay. Good to go okay. Now. So, yeah. That's just so misguided, and I think we have a lot of people that have a warped sense of what it means to be an American. As we started out, everyone has the
or a
right
human being for that
or a human being. I mean, you know, these are universal qualities, right? The ability to say what you want to say without punitive action against you, to be protected in society and not to feel vulnerable at every corner that you turn, to be appreciated by your local and state government. You say, well, why should my local government appreciate me? Because I'm paying taxes. Mm-hmm. And how are they putting food on their table? Because of the taxes that I'm paying. I'm a citizen.
I just sent mine off on the 15th of this month.
You did?
Yeah, man.
Man, you like the 15th.
Yeah, I got a. This is like a quarterly tax deduction I have to pay out. So if you're listening.
Man, I hope the IRS ain't listening, man, because what you doing, man? You got some side hustle going on, bro. Huh? Yeah, let me in on it, man, because you...
I have to pay my taxes. That's the hustle, yeah, I guess. I'm getting hustled.
I'm the one getting hustled.
I'm the victim here. I'm not glorifying this at all. Right, I just got to do what I got to do.
Right. Yeah, you're just trying to, you know, keep your stuff legitimate. And that's the way because, you know, the margin of error for a black man now is zero.
You got to cross
you
the
know,
T,
don't
dot
even,
the I, yeah, use yeah. The comma, use the period, capitalize. You got to do all of it.
Yeah, don't make a mistake, man. It could be fatal. Don't bring no clocks. You know, don't even bring your brother walk in with a clock. He might get, you know. You can't even. I was thinking about changing my clock in my office. I didn't change my mind.
What about all them clocks Flavor Flav used to wear on his?
Yeah, neck, yeah.
Man.
Matter of fact,
have any suspicion about that? Right. Even ask the man, what is the significance behind that? Right.
Matter of fact, somebody
or to say, man, you were out of your mind for doing this every day.
Matter of fact, I believe it was Sasha, one of our listeners, posted a picture in relations to. Ahmed Muhammad, a Flavor Flav with the clock around his neck, which I thought
nobody had any questions about that.
Yeah, yeah, we
then gave the man a reality show. All right, we're diverting. And
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, no. You're exactly right. So coming up next week, 1 p.m. folks, mark your calendar, call in. We want to hear from you. 405-300-8344. Let me repeat that because you didn't get a pen. Get a pen. You got a pen? Man, you know when I'm trying to look for a pen in my car is crazy because I can't find one. I know one's in there.
I keep like five in my car.
And I know one's in there. So I'm trying to give you time to get your pen, okay? And we want you to call in. DT, want to hear from you. It's going to be amazing show, amazing time. You know, I want to do something special for the first caller.
Okay.
Okay, I want to do something special for the first call. I can't tell them.
All right.
But you know, I might. The first caller.
I can see the
ever.
Man's wheels turning. There, it's going to be something great,
man. Something great. It's you might be. It might be something that you might need to go rent a tuxedo for. that's big time right there, ain't huh? Richard, you can't call and disguise your voice, by the way, because I know you can have come up with 6 or 7 different voices and have a brother fool. 405-300-8344. Man, it's been an incredible show.
Man, I'm
American sure. Identity, man. You know, as we try to take you into the American Identity and look at it from a global sense, folks. But again, at the end of the day, it's about people. It's about us. It's about you. It's about one mic one next week. Voice. One mic.
One voice.
One voice next week. One mic. Your voice. We out.
Peace.
History will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.